We're very pleased to have with us Julie McLaren, and you're a distinguished university professor, and you specialize in the Faculty of Law. And also, I wanted to mention that in 2012, you completed a four-year empirical study of Islamic divorce, and you published the book Islamic Divorce in North America, A Sharia Path in Secular Society. So thank you so much for joining us today at the Voice of Islam radio station. So we wanted to just get the interview started, and I wanted to ask you, why are people particularly in the West threatened by the Sharia?
It's a great question and a very important question because it relates so closely to Islamophobia and ignorance about Islam and fear of Muslims. I think there are two main reasons here. The first one is that what most people in the West read about Sharia when they come across the word Sharia, if they're not Muslim, is in relation to particular regimes that have their own particular form of Islamic law, which is extremely coercive and rigid. And the two examples that you see in the press most often are Saudi Arabia, and now obviously we're seeing Afghanistan. And so that's the association that people who are not Muslim have with Sharia, and those are very repressive legal regimes that most Muslims across the world would not consider to be based on Sharia. And the second reason is a bit more academic, which is that I think people don't understand that what Sharia means is the moral conscience and the moral compass of every Muslim. I remember when I was doing my research, a number of the imams explained to me that really Sharia is an internal matter of personal conscience, which might be different for every Muslim. It's not about law. And in fact, Islamic law is quite different from Sharia. It's whatever has been codified into law in a Muslim regime. And I feel like I should point out before finishing this point that whereas Sharia comes from the Quran and the way in which Muslims have lived their lives over centuries, Islamic law was developed after and was developed by men, by male jurists, and so tends to have a particular male bias in it. But it is not the same as Sharia.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that. And do you think there needs to be more collaboration and cooperation between Islamic and Western courts to best serve the needs of the people?
Well, what I saw in my research, Tokyo, which was so interesting, was that the vast majority of the people, the Muslim men, women, and the imams and scholars whom I interviewed, did not believe that the Western courts, if they lived in North America, for example, should actually be dispensing Islamic law as it might be practiced in an Islamic legal system, for example, Egypt or Morocco, or one of those more coercive regimes I mentioned earlier. Instead, they accepted Western courts, but they wanted to be able to practice Sharia as it related to their own customs and traditions and beliefs in a, if you like, a kind of a parallel way. Now, that doesn't mean that Muslims want Western courts to dispense Islamic law, but they do want them to respect it, and they do want them to understand it. And a good example of this is the maha, which is, of course, the promise made in the nikah, in the marriage contract, to make a gift in the event that the marriage becomes dissolved, or sometimes in some Islamic traditions, this is even at the beginning of the marriage, a payment of money. And we've seen over and over again Western courts scratching their heads and saying, but we don't know what the maha is when it comes up as a matter of divorce and a matter of financial distribution. That's starting to change. I'm very pleased to see, even since I did my research, courts in Canada starting to recognize the maha as a legal undertaking that is made and not simply to dismiss it as part of a religion that they're not interested in. So my bottom answer here is I don't think that Muslims need the Western courts to dispense Islamic law. I think they can do that in their families and communities according to their Sharia beliefs, but they do need them to understand the basic principles.
And just lastly, Professor Julie McLaren, how can bias in Canadian culture be addressed, particularly when it comes to Islamophobia and Bill 21?
Well, Bill 21, I want to be very clear about this because it's become an issue in our most recent federal election. Bill 21, which forbids the wearing of any religious dress or symbols in the public sector, is incredibly discriminatory. It's discriminatory against people for whom particular modes of dress, and this includes Muslim women, but it also includes others, for example, Sikhs who would wear turbans. It forbids their wearing in public sector settings, which is obviously going to target people who have faith that relates to those particular religious symbols. So it is a discriminatory law. I think that one of the problems that is at the root of Islamophobia and misunderstanding in Canadian media is the ignorance of the way in which Islam works, and in particular some of the things that I've already talked about, that in fact Muslims do not want to impose Islamic law on Western countries. In fact, the Quran tells them that they must live according to the law of the country that they are residing in. But they do want their traditions and customs respected. And part of those religious differences and traditions include dress. And that is why Bill 21 is inevitably very discriminatory towards Muslims in Quebec. I hope that if we could have more education and a more informed debate by a better informed media, people would come to see that Sharia for Muslims in the West is just like any other conscience code that is followed by people from other religions, and it is not a threat. And in fact, it is remarkably similar in its overall values to the values of people following many different religious faiths.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Julie McLaren, for coming on the Voice of Islam radio station and sharing your expertise with us. Thank you so much.
I'm very, very happy to do so. Thank you, Tahir. Bye-bye.
Thank you.